Hello and welcome to a very special episode of SEAI's 180 Degrees podcast. Here's Fergus Sharkey, SEAI's Head of Business and Public Sector, to tell you more.
We're here today with over 750 delegates at the Helix in DCU for the fourth annual SEAI Public Sector Conference. The theme of the conference is Accelerating Leadership Towards 2030. And what better way to exemplify that theme than with our keynote speaker, Mary Robinson. Mary obviously needs no introduction, but her focus on climate change, both locally and internationally, has served as an inspiration to many. Mary exemplifies leadership values, and we are delighted that she agreed to speak and share her wisdom with us today.
Good morning. I'm honoured to be invited to give a keynote address at this SEAI's fourth annual Energy Efficiency Conference for the public sector. And I do like the overall theme of accelerating leadership towards 2030, as this, I think, is an absolute imperative. For quite a number of years after I completed my term as UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, and once I came to climate justice, working in African countries and seeing the injustice of climate change at the time, 2004 onwards, I've been mainly outside the country, attending conferences on climate, speaking in various parts of the world and trying to draw attention to the injustice, welcoming the fact that children now remind us of the intergenerational injustice. But for the last while, partly because we now have our climate action plan, I do feel as an Eruptron that I have to try to be as encouraging as possible. And that's why it is a privilege to be here. And I've already been impressed by the diversity of public sector hats that you wear in the audience here, but that you have a sense of your leadership. The Climate Action Plan 2019 made it clear that we are coping with a crisis. But that was really brought home to me last month in my capacity as chair of the elders. I was in Washington, D.C. with my deputy, former Secretary General Ban Ki-moon. Now, Ban Ki-moon was my boss for three mandates, for the Great Lakes, for climate change, and for El Nino and climate. And now he's my very supportive deputy, which is, you know, a lot of credit to him. We were there with Jerry Brown, the former governor of California, who is the chair now of the atomic scientists, who determined since 1947 whether the clock will move away from or towards midnight. There have been times in the past it's moved up to 17 minutes from midnight, but 2 years ago it moved to 2 minutes to midnight. And alas, as we unveiled the clock in Washington, it moved to 100 seconds to midnight. There are three things that determine that. The nuclear issue, and unfortunately, that's not getting better because agreements are unraveling between Russia and the United States, and the weaponizing is getting more serious, hypersonic weapons, etc. The second issue is climate change, and I want to quote from what the atomic scientists said about that. And the third one is disruptive technologies, including cyber warfare potentially, and also artificial intelligence potentially controlling dangerous weapons. So all of this meant we're now at the most dangerous point ever. We never, during the Cold War, were at 100 seconds to midnight. Now, that's kind of scary. It's a scary start. I'll bring some hope later. But it was very stark. And I want to quote what the atomic scientists said, because, as I say, it's their determination. They said, public awareness of the climate crisis grew over the course of 2019, largely because of mass protests by young people around the world. Just the same, governmental action on climate change still falls far short of meeting the challenge at hand. At UN climate meetings last year, national delegates made fine speeches but put forward few concrete plans to further limit the carbon dioxide emissions that are disrupting Earth's climate. This limited political response came during a year when the effects of man-made climate change were manifested by one of the warmest years on record, extensive wildfires, and quicker than expected melting of glacial ice. So it is time for an emergency response from the public sector, and your overall theme is spot on. The public sector now needs to step up and take a lead in tackling the challenge of this climate crisis and meeting net zero by 2050. And we have a huge advantage in Ireland, which we should be thankful for. We have a huge advantage of size. It makes it not easy, but a lot more possible to actually address the issues, because you can network together, you can group together, you can share experiences, you can have a common sense of purpose, helped by the fact that we have this advantage of size. Collaborations between government departments and the public sector, as well as between government and industry, is essential. Relevant stakeholders need to be engaged, and with communications and messaging that is clear and that is accessible. Relevant stakeholders need to be engaged with end users, the public, who need to have a clear understanding of what the end goal is now and how they need to act. Grants, funding, and mechanisms for supporting the transition need to be fit for purpose. I hardly need to say that we should avoid having to pay fines for bad planning processes. A significant number of Irish companies are already rising to the challenge and being innovators in their respective fields. And this needs to be backed up by action in the public sector and appropriate policy and regulations. Last month, I was glad to have an opportunity to visit the R&D Centre at Glendiplex in Dunlear, just personally to learn more about innovative approaches to making buildings more energy efficient, because I know that retrofitting buildings is going to be one of our biggest challenges. And although it does present a huge challenge to both the public and the private sector, I am quite impressed about the amount of innovation both there and elsewhere that I'm learning about. There's clearly no silver bullet, but there are exciting innovations if the regulatory environment is encouraging. And as an island economy, Ireland is experiencing some of the challenges of the energy transition at a faster pace than the rest of the European Union, particularly in terms of the changing nature of the electricity system, i.e., for example, increased EV load, increased penetration of renewables, etc. So this puts us in an ideal position to be a testbed for innovative solutions and to lead the way. And happily, we don't have to reinvent the wheel. The frameworks negotiated by member states of the UN in 2015, the 2030 agenda with its 17 sustainable development goals, and the Paris Climate Agreement were voluntary or weak in enforceability. I was there at the time as the special envoy of the UN Secretary General, and I watched the negotiations. It was very impressive to see 193 countries agree the 2030 agenda, and a lot of us are wearing this badge that represents it. But they were agreeing it because it was voluntary. They could pick and choose how to implement it. And as we went forward to the treaty, it was getting weaker, but thanks to the small island states and the least developed countries, we got the mantra in the street in Paris, 1.5 to stay alive, and we got the new goal of staying well below 2 degrees and working for 1.5 degrees. And then the scientists were asked to report on this. And in October 2018, as you'll recall, they reported on global warming at 1.5 degrees and literally altered our understanding of the situation that we're in. The report made it clear that staying at or below 1.5 degrees warming above pre-industrial standards was the only safe level for the whole world, and that further warming up to 2 degrees would cause considerable risk to the planet. And this was followed then last May by the UN report on loss of biodiversity and the potential extinction of a million species. And there were other reports on land use and oceans. As a consequence, we can no longer afford to regard the 2030 agenda and the Paris Climate Agreement as voluntary and a matter for each member state to decide on its own. Instead, the full implementation of both has become imperative in order to secure a livable world for our children and grandchildren. And this requires a change of mindset at the global political level. The IPCC has called for a 45% reduction in carbon emissions by 2030 and said that this is doable if there is the political will. Now, carbon emissions have gone up 4% since the Paris Agreement. So how do we get that political will and sense of global solidarity? I believe it is through the emerging movement for climate justice, putting pressure on governments and on business, particularly the fossil fuel industry. It's heartening to see women leaders stepping forward, school children striking, and young people making their voices heard. Some, such as Extinction Rebellion, have taken to peaceful protest, and there's increasing business and investment leadership, making commitments and calling for more ambition from governments. The importance of this growing climate justice movement is that it will call for a just transition to a world powered by clean energy and climate actions that fully respect human rights. Workers in coal, oil and gas must not be left out, and priority will have to be given to reaching that 1 billion people who still lack electricity, never switch the switch, and the 2.3 billion who cook on charcoal, wood, peat or animal dung and ingest indoor air pollution that kills millions each year. We have the off-grid lights, the mini systems, the clean cook stoves that can transform the lives of a significant portion of our world. All we need is a kind of moonshot approach, like Kennedy saying, we will get to the moon, and they got there in 8 years. And that's the kind of approach that we need at the more global level. But what we also need is that people from all walks of life, including everyone here in the audience, commit to three steps. The first step is to make the issue of climate change, indeed climate crisis, personal in your life, and do something to reduce your own consumption, emissions, such as energy conservation or better recycling or change in eating habits. I think probably quite a number of you know that I recently, just over a year ago, became a pescatarian. I no longer eat meat. It's a small thing, but I don't cheat. And having done this, the second step is to get angry and take action. Get angry with those who have more power and therefore more responsibility. And that actually is governments, even at local authority level. It's cities. But it's also the fossil fuel industry and agribusiness, transport, etc. And take action by using your voice and your vote and by supporting organizations involved in conservation issues or climate change advocacy, which will also help to reduce your climate anxiety. And the third step is perhaps the most important, and we all need to do it, but actually it doesn't surface enough. We all need to imagine this world that we must be hurrying towards. We've a lot to do before 2030 and a whole lot to do before 2050. That means we have to want to do it, we have to be hurrying towards it. It'll be a much healthier world without the air and water pollution of fossil fuel. It'll be a much more equal world because everyone will have access to clean energy. To get there, we will have had to show the solidarity called for in the 2030 agenda. So it'll be a world of deeper human relationships at all levels. It will also be a world of a circular economy, consuming less and valuing more and leaving no one behind. Rising to the challenge of addressing the threat of climate change can be truly transformative and achieve the commitment in the 2030 agenda, as I said, to leave no one behind. As I think this audience knows, Ireland will miss the target set for the period 2013 to 2020 for renewables by about 1/8 and for cumulative emissions by a little under 5%. However, much more worrying is the expectation that recent growth in emissions, particularly from industry, agriculture and transport, will put us on a trajectory to be over 25% off target for the next 2021 to 2030 accounting period. So we have a big hill to climb, and it helps that Ireland joined the Carbon Neutrality Coalition last December. This coalition includes countries, businesses and investors who have committed to be carbon neutral, net zero carbon by 2050. The country I would encourage Ireland to follow in particular is New Zealand. Under the leadership of Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern, New Zealand, which also has a large agricultural sector, has legislated to become carbon neutral by 2050, and we can benefit from learning how this will be implemented in practice. Ireland, too, must plan to legislate to implement its commitment to be carbon neutral by 2050. Agenda 2030 and the Paris Agreement on climate change require a transformational shift of our economies and societies towards climate-resilient and sustainable development. And Ireland and the European Union are responding to this requirement, setting out a profound change in the systems and practices which support our lifestyle. Every home, every community, every workplace, and every farm must be mobilised to get involved. Every network which supports our lives, energy, transport, telecommunications, public service, waste management, must rapidly adapt. Let's remember that in addition to the contribution of the proposals contained in the Climate Action Plan to reduce Ireland's greenhouse gas emissions, many of the changes that are required will have positive economic and societal co-benefits, including cleaner air, warmer homes, and more sustainable economy for the longer term. In line with the UN Sustainable Development Goals, climate action must be seen as complementary to the other important policy objectives, such as promoting sustainable economic development pathways, improving energy security, and addressing air pollution impacts to human health. Rising to this challenge is important not just for Ireland's long-term economic and societal interests, but also in relation to the attractiveness of Ireland as a location for foreign direct investment, as a tourism destination, and as a source of safe, high-quality agricultural and food products. In addition, a renewed climate ambition will help to secure our international reputation, which in turn will underpin Ireland's ability to promote its international policy objectives. As you may know, I'm involved quite a bit in helping Ireland in our wish to become once again a member of the Security Council. That is a big challenge and hard work, and I welcome the fact that Ireland is campaigning vigorously to rejoin the Security Council in 2021. But all of this is connected, and the profile of Ireland will improve the more we fulfil our commitments. And policy must be carefully designed so that the measures are fair and incentives are right. Information and access to capital must be accessible. Supporting infrastructures must be planned and delivered with communities brought on board. Leadership, innovation, and opportunity in the new methods must be developed. These policy frameworks need to evolve continuously as part of a dynamic policymaking process as technology evolves and experience develops. So let me conclude with some thoughts that I hope will motivate each of you further in your leadership role as we move and make transformative change. I've heard of the collaboration in relation to our public lighting to replace the current lighting with LED lights. That's the type of leadership we need to see more of. And think of how the Tidy Towns competition had huge impact all over the country. I remember, as President of Ireland, the joy of giving the top prize. And I remember going to Mallin in the Inishowen Peninsula, which my mother happens to come from, and the excitement in that village to win the top prize of the Tidy Towns. And we've seen how transformative it has been in its own way over the years. I've learned that some towns, like Kinsale, have become plastic-free. What can local authorities do to encourage a whole-of-town approach to becoming energy efficient, waste efficient, and resilient? Could we maybe have a similar award system, or could we broaden the Tidy Towns approach? What about sports clubs and facilities? How soon can these become plastic-free and energy and waste efficient? How do we encourage every business to commit to becoming carbon neutral by 2050 and to do it with just transition if it involves workers? How do we make every school a proud and well-refitted green school? The more we can collaborate and work together, the faster we will climb the hill to net zero by 2050. As the old proverb says, is there scacha chéile a warren na daoine? Is there scacha chéile a warren na daoine? Go raibh míle maith agaibh.
Degrees is brought to you by the Sustainable Energy Authority of Ireland. Don't forget to subscribe to the show, and there's more at seai.ie/podcast. You can also follow us on Twitter and use the hashtag SEAI Podcast.